I love that hymn that we just sang. Jesus asks us, "Will you come and follow me if I but call your name?" Peter was all over that. You remember from last week, "Who do you say that I am?" And Peter knew, Peter proclaimed, "You are the Messiah." Peter knew what has kept bringing people to follow in the way of Jesus since, that Jesus is the one who has come to free us from oppression and lead us in ways that make us people of peace and justice. And when I say us, I mean the world, every person. So that sounds great, but it's not easy. We must enter through the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the road is easy that leads to destruction, and there are many who take it. The gate is narrow and the road is hard that leads to life, and there are few who find it. Truly, how many of us want to take the hard road? As an aside, I'll note, sometimes social media is a good indication of what people want to talk about. I posted a couple of days ago about an article that appeared in the Washington Post about how Episcopalians are killing thousands and thousands of lobsters in our fundraisers and lobster fest broils and things like that. And oh my gosh, has that gotten a lot of play on my Facebook page? So many people have commented, people have posted videos, people are all over that. So last night, and given it was late, I posted that today I'm preaching in part, at least, about racism. Not so much activity. Not so many people commented about that. So, taking the hard road, Peter didn't want to do that. When Jesus began to show his friends what new life through him was going to cost, the way it was going to come about, the suffering and the death on the way to resurrection, we are told Peter said, "God forbid it, Lord." So Peter, who last week was the rock, is now named Satan by Jesus, who says that Peter does not have his mind on divine things, but is rather thinking about human things. And those who want to follow Jesus must take up their cross and be prepared to lose their life so that they may find it. This exchange between Jesus and Peter is perhaps one of the most important for us, for our lives, our life in community, our life together, and given what's going on in our country right now. So often in our culture, we're taught that life shouldn't be hard. But it is through, and you've probably experienced this, right? It's been through the hard conversations and the difficult realizations, when sometimes we even lose the life we've known, that we find a new life of grace, cost what it may. Sometimes the cross that we need to take up is something personal to us, things that happen in our family or people in our lives, things we'd like to ignore, but we know if we do, we're just going to stay stuck, we're never going to move. You know what those are for you. For many, many people, it's addictions, it's hostilities within families, mental illness, but you know what the crosses are in your lives. And as I like to say, if we don't take up those crosses and follow Christ, we're going to trip over them, because they're there. You know it. You know they're there. And always remember, and this is so important, when we're following Christ, when we're following Jesus, God is with us. The Spirit is with us in our journey down the hard road and through the narrow gate. In fact, in my experience, that's when I've known God the best. In our nation, once again, and this invitation never goes away, but we've been invited to take up the cross of racism, to see it, to talk about it, to learn, and to do whatever we can to fight against it. To take up the cross of racism is the hard road for many of us. especially and perhaps surprisingly so for us progressive liberal white people who are here today. Because we think we got it, right? We think we've been doing it, but there's always more to do and more to learn. We can think we understand the issues as white people, but I continue to learn. And the only way to learn about what it's like to live in our nation, being a black person or a person of any color, other than white, see, white's a color too, I'm getting to that, but anyway, is to talk with each other. For example, I was surprised when a person who is black told me that she would never live on Monument Avenue because of the Confederate statues. I must admit to you that never crossed my mind. It never occurred to me. I mean, who wouldn't want to live on beautiful Monument Avenue, right? But no. So I was surprised that I hadn't thought of that. During my childhood, I visited Richmond many times because my grandparents lived here since the 40s. So I'm sure, I don't remember this, but I'm sure when we went around, you know, they'd point out the monuments and say, those are really great, aren't they? Those are beautiful works of art, and they tell us about our history. And I'm sure I was taught to love them in some way. Also, my experience growing up in Virginia, I went to high school, I mentioned last week, outside of Charlottesville in Albemarle County, and I'll never forget how our 12th grade government teacher would speak of the war of Northern aggression. Yeah, and I would laugh. I thought that was funny. But other people didn't laugh. And maybe some of them are taking it seriously. Maybe some of them were marching with the white supremacists just a few weeks ago. Those of us who are white are always learning if we're open to it. Last year, I was with a group of clergy, an intentional group. We were brought together by a woman who is black, who is a priest in this diocese. And so it was a group of black and white clergy. And we did a bunch of things, but we read a book called Waking Up White and Finding Myself in the Story of Race by Debbie Irving. I recommend this to all of you. In our group, we all had great discussion and insights about it. It's written by a white woman, a liberal person, sort of in the JFK New England mold, who in her journey discovered so much that she didn't understand and didn't know, even though she wanted to help. Once a black clergy colleague asked me about what I think is meant by racial reconciliation, because she said, we've never had that, so what are we to be reconciled to? And this is an example of how this is something we all have to work on together. Because as we talked, the idea of reconciliation that we came to together is that God's vision, God's dream, this is what we're to be reconciled to. It's actually something we've never yet experienced in its fullness on earth. But God knows what it is, that every child, every person of every race and ethnicity, that we are to love each other, be there for each other, support and have equality for all. So keep listening. If this is getting difficult for you, please keep listening. These Confederate statues that are across, we're going to have to pick up, and you've already experienced it. I was in New Mexico, right, when all this started to go down, and I could only imagine what you were going through here. It's not easy, but we're going to have to pick them up, look at them, discuss it. You remember, of course, that the neo-Nazis and the white supremacists went to Charlottesville specifically to protest the taking down of the Lee statue in a park that used to be called Lee Park, but it has now been renamed to Emancipation Park. In Charlottesville, that's the name they determined better represents their community. Now, you know, you may be thinking, maybe you're in support of taking down the statues, maybe you're not. But if you are, have you ever thought about changing the name of Monument Avenue to Emancipation Avenue? Wouldn't that be something? Can we even imagine it? Does it upset you? Does it do something within you? Because this is what our street's always been called. We like it. We're glad we're on Monument Avenue. So, I know there are different opinions because some of you have already talked to me about the statues, and that's okay. It's okay. We can have different opinions, and we can talk, and we can learn, and we can grow together. That's what it is to be a congregation. Because I know everyone here is about love. Everyone here wants justice and equality for all in the world and in this city. This is part of what makes this such a narrow gate for us as a community of faith, as a city. The road is hard that leads to life. Never forget that. But it leads to fullness of life, so much so that we've never yet experienced in full. How do we keep our mind on divine things rather than on human things when thinking about this issue? Certainly in discussing, remembering how God would want us to be with each other, as opposed to so much of the division and hostility and immediate shutdown that we see around us in the human experience. How do we live into our baptismal promises, all of them, but thinking about the need to respect the dignity of every human being among each other and in regard to this issue? I am very thankful that the statue on Monument Avenue closest to us is the statue of Arthur Ashe. If you didn't know that, it is, and I'm very thankful for that, but that doesn't mean, you know, we can't look at this whole, we're not, it doesn't let us off the hook. We're still on this avenue. I hadn't really thought that much about it until all this came up. We can also be thankful, as far as I know, we don't have any stained glass in here with Jefferson Davis or Robert E. Lee in it. Some Richmond churches do, some other churches do. Downtown at St. Paul's, where I worked for 2 years and never even noticed that. But they've gone through a really great process, as good as they could do, to address that, and they've removed some of those Confederate symbols, and I think some of the stained glass, I'm not sure. I have to check on that. Then I'm also thankful that we are not named, this church, the Lee Chapel, which there is a Lee Chapel, an Episcopal church in the Commonwealth of Virginia, named for that. It's a very interesting thing. If you're wondering why people have a problem with that name or with the statues, or if you're wondering how people can support the statues or on either end of that, the Episcopal News Service did a great article concerning this chapel named for Robert E. Lee that can be found online, or I can get you a copy. He was a member there, it turns out. He died while being a member there. Before he died, it was named Grace Church, which is so interesting. Don't you hope, don't you pray that just more grace and more grace comes out of this whole situation as we look at it and as we deal with it? As you know, if you know me, I'm not attempting to tell you what to do or to solve this issue today, but bringing it up for discussion and attempting to look at it through the lens of our faith, that's what we're about. I do tend to think that this is a death and resurrection issue, one that will call us to lose the life that we've known. For some people, that's really good news. For others, it's very uncomfortable. So that we can find our life together in peace with justice for all. Early on, the point was made, rightly, that taking down statues is easier than dealing with the societal, systemic forms of racism that exist in our nation. Following Jesus in our time necessitates going deeper, deeper than what we might be seeing. We need to look to Christ, who taught us that suffering and death leads to resurrection. Even thinking that and keeping that in mind in sort of a prayerful way, I believe God can guide us. Because there's something new. There is a possibility. There is the truth. There's something new, something beautiful, something worth walking the hard road to reach. The Reverend Ben Campbell, an Episcopal priest, retired pastoral director of Richmond Hill, and Richmond Hill was founded, originally by Catholic sisters who came to Richmond following the Civil War to help the city, to teach the children, to nurse people. Later, in the early 80s, I think, late 70s, early 80s, it became an ecumenical retreat center dedicated to spiritual growth and spiritual nurture and also racial reconciliation. So Ben was the head of that for a long time. On August 26th, the Richmond Times-Dispatch newspaper published an article he wrote entitled, "Remove the Real Artifacts of the Confederacy." Ben, like many, don't want us to just focus on those statues. And Ben writes in this article, and some of you know Ben, he actually came to this church for quite a while, and he's a friend to many of us. He writes, "The departing Confederacy left two sets of monuments in Richmond. One you can see, what he calls the massive gravestones to a lost cause, spread stiffly and silently down the expanse of Monument Avenue. The second set you cannot see. These are the real artifacts of the Confederacy, driven underground and unacknowledged, which continue to control the lives of our citizens." Ben names five artifacts: the deterioration of public school buildings, distressed public housing projects, buses that stop at the city line, the Richmond City Jail, and the city of Petersburg. I learned things from reading this article, and Ben says more than I can get into here, but he explains how the history, what it is, and how these artifacts impact life today. I also recommend his book to you entitled Richmond's Unhealed History. He concludes his article by saying about the statues, "These are public monuments to the hidden artifacts that still hold our metropolitan city in bondage to the scandal of the Confederacy. The capital of the Confederacy needs to become the capital of reconciliation." I spent a lot of time around Ben back in the early 2000s, listening to him preach and being with him and his sense of call to all this, and it's inspiring. And the more of us who can feel this sense of call and be about it, the more change we'll see, the more coming together of people we'll experience, the deeper sense of God in our presence we will know. Was Charlottesville a burning bush for us and an invitation to encounter God by talking about racism, the Confederacy, the statues? To encounter God working to end racism, at least do our part? Considering what we do, those of us who are white, we still don't understand the experiences. We will never fully understand the experiences of our black brothers and sisters. Was this Charlottesville a burning bush to call those of us who are white to greater discussion, learning? We are standing on holy ground when we look at these issues and talk about them. When we dare to approach that burning bush and listen to God who says, "I have heard the cries and know the suffering of my people." Did we feel like Moses? And I'm not saying that the white people are the saviors here, but anyone who's feeling called, black, white, of any color, feeling called to lean into this, do we feel like Moses did? That we're standing up to Pharaoh, this huge issue that started long ago before we were born? It seems so impossible. We don't feel prepared or have the skills, or, you know, Moses really doubted. And what does God say to Moses? "I will be with you." When we face into the hard thing, take up our cross, God is with us in a way that makes life amazing and divine. We can be energized, inspired in a way that we've never imagined. Jesus told us, he told his disciples, "If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will find it." Amen.